So I've got a question for all the video game lovers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance, so I'd visit alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. This week in patron-exclusive episodes of Retronauts, our celebration of the 30th anniversary of Street Fighter II continues with an episode focused just on Street Fighter II. And I do mean just on Street Fighter II, as in the World Warrior. No Hyper, no Turbo, no Rainbow, no Ultra. None of that. Just the original Street Fighter II. It's a game that had such an enormous, face-crunching impact on video games and on pop culture that we devoted an entire episode to it. We'll talk about the variants and the spin-offs and the sequels in other episodes. But for now, it's me, Jeremy Parrish, with Diamond Fight, Kurt Collada, and Cat Bailey, talking about this huge, massive, earth-shaking, bone-breaking, etc., etc., fighting game. And it is an exclusive episode just for patrons. And you can listen by going to patreon.com/retronauts. By subscribing to the show at the $5 per month or higher level, you'll gain instant access not only to this episode, but to every other patron-exclusive episode we've recorded every other week for more than a year now, as well as a year's worth of columns and mini-podcasts that appear every weekend from Diamond Fight. That's a whole lot of content, a whole huge backlog of stuff that you can listen to and enjoy. And it's all for the cost of, what is that, like 20 rounds of Street Fighter II? Not a bad deal, in my opinion, especially since no one's going to arcades these days. So, check it out, listen to the Street Fighter II 30th anniversary retrospective episode with myself and Diamond and Kat and Kurt, and look forward to another episode on Monday. That's patreon.com/retronauts. About 30 years ago, where young Jeremy was really, really, really into Street Fighter II in the arcade and then in the home version, so I have a lot of memories wrapped up with this game, and I followed it, you know, throughout the various permutations. I'm sorry, Mr. Ono, I did not play Ultra Street Fighter 2. But, you know, it's still a viable product in that sense. The most recent iteration, the most recent version of Street Fighter 2 came out in 2017 with the launch of Nintendo Switch. That's pretty remarkable. But the game actually made its debut almost exactly 30 years ago, the week of this recording, in February of 1991, and here we are in 2021, and it's still like the impact of Street Fighter II is still out there. So let me put it to you, the question to you: where did you each discover Street Fighter II? Diamond, let's start with you and work our way back toward the East Coast of the U.S.
Well, firstly, I can say that I definitely remember Street Fighter I. I did not play it much, but I remember seeing it a lot at the sort of go-to arcades that I would visit.
Wow. And so that actually puts you one up over most of the people who are on the Street Fighter I podcast. I'm sorry we didn't invite you.
No, it's fine. I barely played it because it didn't seem like my thing. I definitely saw the version that had like the big punch sensitive buttons that like, I'm not a strong person, but I just like this is not for me. So when Street Fighter II came out, I was sort of curious, like, well, they made another one, because that just wasn't, you know, if it had been ER Kung Fu 2, I'd be like, oh, snap, ER Kung Fu 2, you know, but instead it was like Street Fighter 2. Okay. But, you know, I think right from the start, the 2 is so many magnitudes improved over the first one, just from initial appearance alone and sounds, you know, just watching the game sit there in whatever format it's in, it just, the music is blasting, you get two giant characters, one of them punches the other one in the face, like, okay, this is your game, here we go. The first place I saw it, there are so many options. At this point in time, I was surrounded by, you know, I had an embarrassment of choices. It was probably one of the nearby locations near my high school, because arcade games were so popular at that point that there were businesses that were not even arcades. They would shove them in a corner and just have them there. So like the same places that would have had, say, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle beat 'em ups, or a Double Dragon, or Final Fight, eventually Street Fighter II would just appear there, and that was it. Then all the kids were just going there, you know, on lunch breaks or after school, and we were just all there, and we couldn't get away from it. And then it just became a thing, like, you know, you'd hear it when it appears. Someone you meet would tell you, oh, they've got it down there now. They've got it over at the pizza place, you know, over there now. And it started spreading around, and then it was just everywhere, and every business that could have one would have one somewhere. And then eventually, of course, would be the upgrades or the pirate versions. And yeah, but for a time there, it was just everywhere. The vanilla version was just everywhere, and it was inescapable.
Mm-hmm. Kat, how about you?
I don't remember the first time that I saw it. I do know that I agree with Diamond, though, that it was ubiquitous, because I remember going to a place called Skateville, and Skateville was a roller skating rink, and there was a bunch of arcades there, and Street Fighter, I remember Street Fighter 2 catching my eye, because they had that really good eye catch where the two guys are kind of doing the bobbing and the waving, and then one does the punch, and they fall away, and then it goes up to Street Fighter 2, and then you get that amazing art. That amazing art always just immediately grabs your attention. You had to play that game. And then I became really, really obsessed with Street Fighter 2 for quite a while. I remember I had the tabletop role-playing game. Whoa. I was learning about all of the different heroes. I usually played Dhalsim because I couldn't do any of the special moves because I was like 8. And so I would do the little slide kick all over the place all the time. And it was actually one of the few instances where I was able to bond with my parents, because there was a Street Fighter II machine, the local McDonald's, because they were putting arcade machines in McDonald's at that time. And I would basically beg my parents to take me to McDonald's so that kind of marketing would work. And my dad would give me a $20 bill, and we would play Street Fighter II together. And he was quite mean, because he would play E Honda and trap me in the corner and do the 100 hand slap. And it was very cheap, but it taught me a hard lesson, I guess.
That reminds me of, I guess we're going to go into anecdotes already. We'll get to you in a second, Kurt, but it just reminds me of one time I was at a movie theater, and this was, you know, back before Street Fighter II had a whole bunch of iterations, and I was just playing, you know, on my own quarter, and this little kid came up with his mom and wanted to play. I was like, well, I didn't say anything, but I was like, you know, I'm in the middle of a game. But she was like, okay, you can play. And so she let him play. And I was like, what do I do? Like, I was actually making some progress with the game. I'd beaten like 4 or 5 opponents, so I wanted to see how far I could go on my quarter. But at the same time, I didn't want to be an asshole and just like demolish this child. They were probably, you know, like 8 or 9. So I was playing Chun-Li, because I always played Chun-Li, and basically just played keep away for 2 rounds, and the kid couldn't land any damage, and I like did one little tap and punched him so that I ended up winning. But I was like, I'm going to give you the most possible time you can have on this quarter, but I am not giving up my progress here, young man. So anyway, that's me kind of being a jerk, but not totally being a jerk.
Jeremy Parrish, no remorse.
I mean, if I had no remorse, I would have just slaughtered the child and been like, please go away. I tried to be nice and at least, you know, like let him feel like he was accomplishing something. But still, you know, that was the best I had done on one quarter before. So I couldn't give that up. Anyway.
Did you beat Bison?
No, I don't think I made it past Balrog. I was mostly used to the Super
NES. Well, you got to the bosses. That's really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd been playing it at home quite a bit. By that point, so I was like, oh, I can try the arcade again now that I've, you know, cut my teeth on the Super NES version. But the bosses in the arcade are really, really hard, like unbelievably difficult. So they beat me down pretty quickly. I was like, Balrog, with Chun-Li, I'm gonna just wipe the floor with him. But no. I didn't. She lost all her teeth. It was terrible.